This call is being recorded.
Hi, this is Sierra Dahl with Municipal Sustainability and Energy Forum. Welcome to the conference call today. And we have two presenters discussing various aspects of biomass and a couple of projects that should be of interest. Randy, the guest today, and his company is Johnson Energy Solution, and Evan Hughes out of California is a consultant for both biomass and also for geothermal. So, Evan, why don't you start us out?
Okay. I'll start with a word about my background. I've worked in renewable energy going way back to joining SRI in 1973. That's SRI International in Menlo Park, California, which is where I now live. I was up for 3 years as an employee of the Energy when it was first started in California, 1975 to 78, and it was after that that I joined EPRI. My focus was on geothermal energy at the Energy Commission and for the first half of my EPRI career. And then I had some biomass and coal power generation background and fuels background at the Energy Commission, where I also had a fuels responsibility as well as geothermal. And then at EPRI, I was first in geothermal for half of 24 years, and the other half roughly was on biomass energy. And what I wanted to talk about today is some projects that I've been associated with and know about that are in the field of biomass to electricity via two or three different technologies. My current work on identifying projects is being done as a part-time and very much off-site employee of Energetics Incorporated, which is based in Washington, D.C. and Columbia, Maryland. I was involved with Energetics in doing a proposal to the California Energy Commission to do what's called a research roadmap. It's basically planning and justifying a research program. This would be for the program called EPIC at the Energy Commission, which is electric power in investment charge, which is paid for by ratepayers in the investor-owned utilities in California. And we are to be planning future R&D in the area of electricity in industrial, agricultural, including food processing, and water, those three sectors of the California energy economy. Two technologies that I've worked on over the past 10 years or so in one capacity or another. One involves anaerobic digestion, and the other involves chemical looping combustion, which means transferring oxygen into combustion, not by taking it from the air and therefore diluting it with a lot of nitrogen in the air in the combustion process, but doing a chemical looping, which means you take the oxygen out of a metal oxide and then recover the metal oxide back into a metal and then recycle that through the reactor. That's what it means by chemical looping. Result is the combustion products are water vapor and carbon dioxide, making it easy to condense out the water vapor and therefore capturing carbon. That particular technology is developed by a company called ZERE, Z-E-R-E, for zero energy, zero emission renewable energy. And that's based here in the Bay Area in California. And it was started by a former colleague of mine at EPRI, George Touchton, now deceased, and the project is run by Marisa Zuzga, with whom and some others I worked on a study for the Energy Commission and a laboratory testing of that technology. The other anaerobic digestion technology, I think, is especially well connected to municipal sustainability, because anaerobic digestion is used to treat sewage sludge in wastewater treatment facilities, which are very often, almost always, owned by municipalities or that type of government. In this case, the particular slant on anaerobic digestion that I've worked on is with a company in Utah called Bountiful Applied Research, because it's located in Bountiful, Utah, north of Salt Lake. And they are now working on to obtain funding for the testing and then design for a municipal waste collection, I guess, and disposal processing facility in Layton, Utah, north of Salt Lake, Davis County, I think. Anaerobic digestion is an unusual choice for this technology, because it starts out with alkali pretreatment, which is one of the ways for doing pulping or wood processing and making pulping for a paper and cardboard operations. Therefore, it's starting with dry biomass instead of wet biomass, and anaerobic digestion usually starts with wet biomass. The treatment that is proposed in this process is the conventional, or sort of conventional, initial separation of cellulose, lignin, and hemicellulose that's done in pulping. And then the hemicellulose stream is a all-liquid stream, which would be called clarified black liquor. And this goes into the anaerobic digestion. And the result is your energy production on site can be directed toward biomass, a liquid fuel substitute, compressed natural gas made from biomass, sometimes called renewable natural gas, or RNG, or it's a biomass-based substitute for compressed natural gas, in which can be used in equipment and truck engines. The other product would be, alternatively, electric power by the biogas going into a combustion engine and generating electricity. This technology would be based on because it uses pulping technology familiar in the wood products industry as a start. It would be focused on forest waste, and particular the large target for commercialization would be working with forest agencies on thinning forests so that the high risk catastrophic forest fires don't take place, because the excess biomass on the ground and in small trees is removed to protect the main forest and avoid catastrophic fires. And this could be coupled with other ways of processing this material, such as torrefaction, which produces a coal-like material that can be burned as a substitute, replacing some coal, and therefore reducing fossil carbon emissions in the electric power industry. I think I've already described the zero waste, zero emission technology by Zeri as chemical looping combustion, And that is aimed more for the same kind of size range on the order of 1 megawatt, maybe in this case going as high as 20 megawatts. But it's more for industrial facilities, and the coupling to municipal sustainability would be by using local resources in perhaps connected to the clean energy systems or customer choice aggregation systems that have been the subject of some of our telephone calls and webinars through Municipal Sustainability Forum. I think I'll stop at that point and hear what Randy has to talk about.
Okay, Randy, go ahead.
Okay, thanks, Evan. Now, my background is I worked for the Tennessee Valley Authority for over 27 years. Took an early retirement in 2014 and then started my own company. And I work primarily in renewable, sustainable energy solutions. One thing that Evan meant, and I'll talk a little bit more about anaerobic digestion and renewable natural gas in a minute, but wanted to mention one of the things I did at TVA was for about 10 years I was over the fossil fuel program, which also included alternate fuels. And one of the things we looked at was torrefied biomass. And what is quite interesting about it is for most coal plants, power plants in the U.S., they're pulverized fuel units, and basically biomass doesn't work very well at all because wood won't grind in a pulverizer. But when you torrefy it, it changes the friability of it. Essentially, what you're doing is making charcoal, and it easily goes through a pulverizer at that point. And you also raise the BTU from 4,000 BTU for green wood up to about 12,000. So you can actually do a direct substitution of torrefied biomass for coal. So it would be a potential, I always thought it would be a good potential way to convert a coal plant to biomass without spending a lot of money. My point then was, instead of modifying the unit, you could modify the fuel and do an easy conversion. I don't know of any that have taken off yet, but anyway, I wanted to put that two cents in. I always thought that was a neat idea. What I'm doing primarily now, though, is working on putting together projects using anaerobic digestion, and we're working and then converting it to renewable natural gas. I'm working on several existing wastewater treatment facilities that already have anaerobic digestion and are either making electricity or flaring gas. And then I'm working at some new agricultural projects where we'll be treating animal waste in an anaerobic digester. And then also food waste can be treated very well in that anaerobic digester. And you can actually combine those waste streams, like food waste with dairy waste or hog waste or whatever. And in fact, the project that is closest to fruition right now is a dairy farm project where we're also treating some food waste. What is interesting is those projects in the southeast were not very economical for years because most of the time people took the biogas and used it to make renewable electricity, but the price of electricity is so cheap in the southeast that it was hard to come up with the economics. But in 2014, EPA changed the renewable fuel standard and such that agricultural digester gas that's cleaned up and put in the pipeline can qualify as vehicle fuel because it can be used for compressed natural gas or or liquefied natural gas. And so in that program, they have basically renewable attribute credits, similar to renewable electricity credits, which are called RINs. That's R-I-N, renewable identification numbers. So one RIN is equivalent to a gallon of ethanol. So it's the program that requires fuel producers to blend a certain amount of biofuels in with their fuel. So what makes these so attractive is that for every 77,000 BTUs of biogas produced or renewable natural gas produced, that generates one RIN. So now a RIN is selling on the market today for $2.60 each. So what that means is this week, renewable natural gas is selling for $35 a million BTU as compared to about, say, $3 for natural gas. So the economics have just improved astronomically. So now what most people are doing is putting in and this same concept applies for wastewater treatment plants and landfill gas. But so what most people are doing now instead of doing CHP is using, cleaning up the gas, putting in the pipeline to sell as renewable natural gas. And what you have to do, most biogas applications produce a gas that's about 60% methane. So what you have to do is run it through a biogas upgrade plant to get that up to about 98% methane. So those plants aren't cheap, but they pay off pretty quickly with those kind of economic numbers. So I'm working with I am working with a company called BioFirm that makes anaerobic digesters, and they also own a company called Carbotech that makes the biogas upgrade plants. And both of those companies are owned by a very large German company called Viessmann. It is a $2.5 billion private owned company in Germany that does a lot of boilers and heating systems, and they own these two companies. And they have done over 400 digesters in Germany and over 900 gas cleanup plants over there. So they have a U.S. headquarters in Madison, Wisconsin. They've done a number of digesters in the U.S. They're doing their first gas cleanup plant out in Oklahoma right now. So that's what we're focusing on right now. We're very close to putting in the first agricultural digester in the state of Tennessee. We work on a number of digester projects. There's a lot of interest in food waste projects, trying to keep food waste out of landfills. So we're doing a lot of work in that area as well. And what I will do is provide Sierra with some links to websites that have more information on the technical details of some of these projects. And if you go to my website, there's a high level, it's jenergysolutions.com. There's some high level information on the project site about the kind of projects we're doing on food waste and agricultural waste. Perhaps I'll stop there and allow some time for questions.
All right. So do you have questions for each other?
I had a couple of questions that came to me while listening. One is a comment. In my work for energetics, I came across a project, a large waste collection and processing facility near, it's in Perris, California, P-E-R-R-I-S, in Riverside County. That's east of Los Angeles, about 60 or 80 miles. Riverside County, it's a a project which includes renewable natural gas for the fleet of waste gathering, you know, collection trucks that they have as part of the company. The company is called CR&R, and they are adjacent to a wastewater treatment plant, and so they're doing what Randy described, mixing some organic waste that they've produced together with the sewage sludge from the adjacent plant. And that's an area that Energetics has been asked to look at when it involves electricity generation, because we're working for the electricity project in California on this case. But that's one example of the process that Andy mentioned. I've also come across projects in California on dairy waste mixing with food waste also. And I think some of those are on a link that I can send to Sierra, and she can distribute. Let's see, another question I had regarded, you mentioned the cost of electricity and the value of RINs, which would be compared to fuel at a dollar per gallon type of number, I think. My first question, Randy, was you mentioned 77,000 BTUs is equal to one RIN, which is renewable. What's it? Some kind of credit. What's it mean?
It's renewable identification number, and one RIN is supposed to be equal to 1 gallon of ethanol. And I think I've seen numbers that are actually 77,700 and something, but EPA uses 77,000 BTUs for a RIN for a gas conversion.
In connection with my project with the Utah company, BARC, their process is called APADX. It stands for all the letters involved in the technology, which is alkali pretreatment anaerobic digestion in a closed system. That's how they get APADX as the acronym. Anyway, on their project, one cost analysis that they did tied it to $1.50 per gallon price of LNG, and that seemed very close to what you just gave. I think they were using $1.50 a gallon, and a gallon of LNG, it looks like it's on the order of 82,000 BTUs. So that's, I'd say, almost identical to your $1.60 per RIN, based on, in that case, on a gallon of liquefied natural gas. My question also concerned, you mentioned $3 per million BTU for regular natural gas, but a RIN can be sold at the equivalent of $35 per million BTU. Could you explain a bit about that?
Yes, and by the way, I just realized I thought I had it on mute, but my dogs just went crazy. I work out of my house. But, So when you clean it up to pipeline standards, you're really just producing natural gas, but it's renewable. So what you do is you sell the gas just as you would sell brown gas. But once someone buys that gas and creates vehicle fuel with it, or then you create the RIN credits. And you trade those, and my understanding is normally people like BP are the ones that are in the market for the credits. So they buy the credits to meet their requirements for the EPA's renewable fuel standard. Now, some people, I was at a conference this week, and Memphis Light Gas and Water has their own CNG station, and they actually are using landfill gas to provide the fuel for that. So they're actually producing net zero emissions compressed natural gas at their facility. So you can do it. You can use it anywhere that you create fuel, but the primary market are the big refiners. It's a paper swap with the RINs. You're creating a RIN, you know, a credit, and then when you eventually you retire the credit, just like you retire a renewable electricity credit.
Mm-hmm. On renewable electricity, one of the projects that I've looked at, talked about, Taylor Energy is the company in this case, and they're doing a project with their catalytic thermal gasification process, and the company, the CEO is located up near Sacramento in the foothills of California, east of Sacramento, but the project is being done in the city of San Bernardino in Southern California, somewhat north of Riverside, about 80 miles east of Los Angeles. And they referred to their technology as targeting at a 10 megawatt electricity generation size to produce power at $118 per megawatt hour, which would be like a little less than 12 cents per kilowatt hour. And they say that this will be competitive because at the time it would come to market commercially around 2024, the anticipated price of electricity going into the grid at the wholesale level would be about 15 cents a kilowatt hour or $150 per megawatt hour. Another comparison that came to my mind in your description of upgrading to a pipeline quality gas is a project or an idea that the municipal utility in Sacramento, California has worked on. It's to take biogas generators, such as at landfills or at food processing or municipal water treatment plants, for that matter, I think. Anyway, it's to take biogas, which, as you say, could be 60% methane. Sometimes I've seen 70% for some feedstock and anaerobic digestion processes. But anyway, it's about that percentage. And to upgrade it to pipeline quality, which you say is 98% methane. And you'll also have to take out any impurities. You can comment on how much of that is involved. And then put it into a pipeline. What SMUD wanted to do, this is the Sacramento Municipal Utility District, they are an electricity supplier, and they have a very efficient natural gas combined cycle power plant in their area, which is a very large plant, like 400 megawatts or so, and it has a very efficient electricity generation. So their argument is the natural gas that they displace from in the pipeline by this renewable gas should get electricity credit on the basis of the conversion to electricity in this efficient combined cycle unit. And so that's their way of saying that they're providing renewable-based electricity from their pipeline gas, but the distribution is done by pipeline and the conversion is done at a very efficient power plant. Have you happened to have heard of anyone working that angle elsewhere in the country?
Yes, I'm pretty sure you could do that anywhere. I talked about the vehicle fuels. There's actually several markets. So you could do electricity by burning renewable natural gas, and again, that would be somewhat of a almost a paper swap. It's, for instance, TVA could buy renewable natural gas and offset natural gas burn at one of their combined cycle plants and qualify that. There's another big market for the gas and industrial renewable natural gas with companies like Unilever and General Mills and some of the big companies that have said they're going to go to 100% renewable energy by 2030. And one of those I know of is Unilever, and they specifically said 100% renewable energy, including gas. So if you take a big food processing plant, and I did some work with a big ice cream plant here in Tennessee, they have two enormous natural gas boilers because you use so much hot water and steam and sanitary water processes that typically those plants would have very large natural gas boilers. So to offset that, there's a large market for industrial renewable natural gas. But I understand from working with a consultant that buys and sells renewable gas that he gets a call every day wanting to buy renewable gas, natural gas for $8 to $9 a million BTU, but he doesn't have any available because it all goes to the vehicle fuel market. But there is a market for that, and there's a market. And where I think that would play well is, for instance, in Canada, where so this renewable fuel standard is an EPA thing. It's a U.S. EPA thing. So if you go outside of the U.S., then I think you start playing into renewable electricity markets and renewable natural gas markets. And depending on the location and the price of electricity, it would depend, you know, what played out the best economically.
So right now I'd like to just open it up to anybody else who might have questions. We have a few other people on the call, and I'll just introduce them briefly. Clean and Rob is an attorney from Virginia who's attending. Tim Bancroft is one of our newer members from Massachusetts. I don't know who we have from New York. Do you want to identify yourself?
David Kay.
Right, oh, Sarah. David, good. Glad you could make it, yeah. And then also we have, I'm assuming, Matthew Marshall. It looks like your phone number, Matthew. Is that you from California? So any of you have questions for these folks? This is Randy Johnson, who is a guest speaker right now, and Evan Hughes, both of whom are experts on biomass, as you may have figured out by now.
Sure, this is David. Could you just say a little more about the policy change that transformed the economics of biogas and how, you know, is that a durable policy likely to last through the Trump administration or not?
Yes, I can speak a little bit to that. So this is part of the renewable fuel standard that I guess was put in place, I believe, in 2009. And EPA mandated the use that fuel producers would blend renewable fuels with that. So that, and that's typically when you go to the pump and you see X percent ethanol. So it's based on ethanol. And to go to the last part of your question, so the ethanol, or the preponderance of it is ethanol, corn-based ethanol, which comes from the corn states, which Mr. Trump got a lot of votes from. And both he and the new Secretary of Agriculture have assured them that no one is going to touch the renewable fuel standard. So, you know, you can debate whether ethanol, the validity of ethanol's use for reducing emissions, but it's pretty safe, the program is. Now, it is a much like electricity credits, it's a variable market, and it's actually just been climbing through the roof. But so what happens, that's been in place since 2009, and basically there were not enough renewable fuels to blend for the refiners, the main refiners, to meet their requirements. So in 2014, they amended the renewable fuel standard and designated CNG and LNG from landfill gas and digesters as cellulosic biofuel that qualifies for a, they call it a D3 RIN. And that includes biogas from landfills, municipal wastewater treatment facility digesters, agricultural digesters, and separated municipal solid waste digesters. So basically, it's biogas from cellulosic components of biomass. And they also, food waste, since it cannot be necessarily classified as cellulosic, gets a D5 designation. And the RIN values for food waste digesters is not as high, but I ran it the other day and it still runs the cost of, or the value of the gas up to about $15 a million BTU. So it's still pretty good, even for food waste digesters. So there's a really good article in BioCycle Energy or BioCycle Magazine, if anyone is interested. And let's see, this was there. So it's probably online somewhere, and I can provide that to, it was in their February issue, but that is where it all came about. It was a modification. So up until 2014, most people that put in digesters put in combined heat and power systems to generate electricity.
Can I ask a follow-up, and then I actually have to go pretty soon, but my follow-up is, you talked about the cost of upgrading from, I forget what you said, something like 60% methane to, I think you said 98% methane to make it ready, pipeline ready, or what proportion of the total cost of production is that upgrade part? Do you have any sense of that?
Right now, I can give you an idea. So I'm working on an agricultural digester project now, which will end up being probably around $5 million, and about $2 million of that is the gas upgrade facility. And I do know that you have to have a fairly high volume of gas before you can justify putting in a unit. And like the one we're doing is about $2 million. We could get one that will produce 10 times that gas for $4 million. So it's not a linear thing. It's once you get enough, it's, you know, it's a little bit bigger system. So
so could you take that down to the other end? What's the smallest scale that would make sense to do that? Possibly.
Probably about 100 CFM.
Okay.
So, and a lot of times that's what you're talking about at a landfill or a smaller landfill. And I'm working on a project now where there's a landfill that doesn't quite have enough gas to justify a gas cleanup facility. So I'm trying to put in a municipal digester to treat food waste from the city, and located at the same at the landfill, and so then you could combine the gas streams from each together to one gas cleanup plant. So you can do that and perhaps justify a project.
Thank you. I apologize. I have to leave for another meeting, but it was fascinating.
I have a quick comment on your question. David, in California, we have targets for greenhouse gas reduction by 2030, and these these targets would preserve a market for this sort of thing in California, regardless of federal rules.
Oh, okay, good. I'm going to tell my daughter about that because she's living in California now and is interested in this stuff. Thank you.
Any other
good morning,
questions?
Everybody.
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, this is Tim Bancroft with Quest. I was actually previously based in the Boston area, but now I'm living in Portland. But through all of that time, I worked for a Oakland, California-based company called Quest, and we primarily administer energy efficiency programs in California. Excuse me. And one of those programs is called the California Process Optimization Program. It's not clear why we chose that name, but it's specifically targeting energy efficiency in muni wastewater treatment plants. And we've had that program for, I think, for about 15 years now. And we're just starting to, you know, really break open the universe of possibilities for how those kinds of facilities can become super energy efficient, maybe less reliant on the grid for energy. And I would be interested to hear from Evan. I think since you live in California now, are there already discussions of whether it's more valuable for munis to sell energy produced from those anaerobic digesters to a local community choice aggregator? Or do you know, are the IOUs aggressively going after energy sources like that?
I know that a sales point for the community choice aggregation systems that are being set up throughout California, I know that one of their sales points is about getting electricity supply from local sources. There's a former EPRI consultant who worked for me when I was at EPRI, and 20 years later, he is the purchasing person for the newly active San Mateo County Peninsula Clean Energy, it's called.
Okay.
And he has not yet found local sources, although the one that you mentioned could be a good one. But they're trying to find local sources, but as far as I know, he hasn't been able to sign any up yet. He's just been in this job, and the whole system has just been operating for about 6 months or so. But I agree that that's a good target and potential business, but I don't yet have a case history to tell you about that's already in operation.
Thank you. Yeah, there is another CCA or CCE, whichever you prefer, that's coming online for Alameda County. And just yesterday, in a meeting with San Francisco East Bay stakeholders, we learned that all but six of the jurisdictions in Contra Costa County have now signed on to Marin Clean Energy, which was one of the first, or I think the first, CCEs in California. So the landscape is changing practically overnight, but it would be good, since we provide the service to wastewater treatment plant operators, to also start thinking about not only the energy efficiency angle, but trying to contribute to those local communities' energy goals. So that's something we'll start looking into.
Matthew, do you want to weigh in on that? Are you still there, Matthew?
Yeah.
Are you doing anything up in your neck of the woods on biomass or anaerobic digesters?
Nothing innovative. So we are contracting with one of our local biomass plants, which is just a conventional, from the 80s or maybe even before, biomass associated with one of our local mills. But nothing yet on the new technology side.
What location are you talking about?
Humboldt County, so up Eureka in Northern California.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Matthew's group has set up a very innovative CCA up in that area. I was just curious to know if the biomass has been a discussion as far as...
It has definitely been a discussion, and it's one of the local kind of priorities just because it's crucial to the timber mills around here to have functioning biomass. The challenge is that, the cost of electricity, for them to be sustainable is pretty high compared to market prices. So it's a balancing act of how much we can afford to roll in at, above market prices and keep rates competitive. So.
Do you have beetle kill up in that area?
Fortunately, not so much, which... from the only downside of that is, there's certainly, some tree mortality, but nothing like in the Sierras. And so, our area doesn't really, the tree sort of emergency orders and everything associated with biomass related to that doesn't really relate too much up here.
Yeah, the whole western slope of the Colorado is just decimated. It was appalling when I first saw it. That finally got used to it, but everywhere, up and down the whole western slope, everywhere is just dead trees, nothing else. It might be coming back now a little bit, but it seems like it should be a good use for biomass if they can harvest it. So,
part of the plan.
Yeah, anybody else? Go ahead.
I wanted to ask Tim about this project in Contra Costa County. You say that all but six municipalities in Contra Costa County have voted to join Marin Clean Energy. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yeah. When MCE, or rather the Marin Energy Authority, came online, circa 2012, I think. the city of Richmond, which is in Contra Costa County, was they jumped on board very quickly because they have always very aggressively pursued their climate action plan goals and got on board really quickly. And in the subsequent years, there were a handful of other Contra Costa cities who also joined, but there were another 12 to 18 of those cities who had council meetings this past spring. MCE presented their program benefits and how to join, how much it costs, and all of those, or almost all of those cities, are now planning to join the Marin Clean Energy Network and will purchase their energy from them. And of course, they have the option of 50% clean energy, 100% clean energy, and then there's also the option to purchase 100% local solar.
Mm-hmm. And it sounded like you may be working on wastewater treatment plants in that area, East Bay or Contra Costa, including perhaps Richmond, and that these could become suppliers of renewable electricity that would be located in Contra Costa County.
Yes. Yeah, mm-hmm. That's the idea. And we have a what's called a third party program through PG&E, and we serve wastewater treatment plants throughout PG&E's service territory. That still seems like a great opportunity for communities in Contra Costa, in Alameda, and in Marin. And now it sounds like San Mateo, there might be some way there to use those energy resources.
I hope so. I'm in San Mateo County, right on the border with Santa Clara County. Palo Alto is adjacent to Menlo Park, where I live. And Palo Alto is the northernmost city in Santa Clara County, which extends down well past San Jose to the south. But a project that I learned about back around 2010, 2011, was called the Palo Alto Compost Energy Project. And the idea of these citizens of Palo Alto was to have their landfill, which used to have a local composting operation, which was closing. It was to replace that with what they called dry anaerobic digestion, meaning you put the material in with a shovel instead of a pump and a pipeline. Was an anaerobic digestion, which could be coupled to their sewage sludge incinerator, which is an obsolete kind of technology, mostly used anaerobic digestion now. But it was to couple to that and supply renewable electricity to the city of Palo Alto, which is a municipal utility which is going 100% renewable for their electricity supply. And I learned also that the dry anaerobic digestion process is put as a later phase of what Palo Alto does, but meanwhile already in operation for about 3 years now, I think, is a large operation in San Jose called Zero Waste Energy Development, which is a combination of a green waste and the Zanker landfill operation, I think, to do a dry anaerobic digestion, and that's been running for about 3 years. A substantial project, which is associated with City of San Jose, which is going to do its own community choice aggregation, so they might put that into among their sources of electricity.
Yeah, we've reached that point where we should get energy any way we can, as long as it's renewable, of course. So those are really cool, innovative projects, and I will try to update you folks later on if we can collaborate with any local plants and try to get them to sell what they produce into the local CCE market.
I would mention that I talked about Biofirm and anaerobic digesters before. They make three different kinds of digesters, but they make a dry digester. They have one at the University of Wisconsin, and they're building one right now for the City of Edmonton and the University of Alberta as well, using them for educational purposes as well. And they produce electricity at the one up in Madison, Wisconsin.
Biofirm is FERM, as in fermentation?
Yeah, BIOFERM, and it's Biofirm Energy Systems, I believe. And there is a case study on their website. There's
information on the Carbotech as well. So there in Madison, they have a digester, the largest dairy farm in Wisconsin. It's 8,500 cows. And then they have one that kind of looks like it's in a packaging container, like an ocean, a steel packaging container that has a CHP in the end of it. And they have one of those on a 150 cow farm. And then they have the dry digester as well. And all those are tied in with the University of Wisconsin for educational purposes. And then, as I say, I think they've had that dry digester probably for 3 years or so up in Wisconsin. And they're building one up in Canada now for the University of Alberta and the City of Edmonton.
Coupling the university to the City of Edmonton probably involves adding food waste into a sewage sludge digester. Is that the idea there?
I could find out, but I don't know the details of that. I think they probably have put out a case study on it.
Mm-hmm.
It's either municipal waste. I think it's either municipal waste. It may be brush and lawn clippings and stuff. I don't know. I don't think it's sewage sludge. I think it's probably municipal solid waste.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, we just have a couple more minutes left. And what I'd like to say is if any of you, either Evan or Randy, would like to go ahead and send me links to whatever you'd like people to see, go ahead and do that via email, and then I'll go ahead and forward that to the group so anybody can click on it and learn more. Is there any more questions or comments? And if not, we can go ahead and end it.
This is just Clina. I found it really informative. I'm looking forward to getting the link. Thanks so much.
Thanks for coming, Clina. Anybody else? Okay. Well, we'll have our webinar in June, and I'll be sending invitations out probably in another month or a few weeks here, a couple weeks maybe. Thanks for everybody for attending. Excellent presentation for both Randy and Evan. Enjoyed the conversation very much. I think people get a lot out of it, and hope to see you all next time.
Thank you.
Take care.
Thank you. Take care.
Thank you.